Hi, today is October 1st, 2017. This is Mobile Views Podcast number 224. Todd Gosselhardt, my good friend John Westfall. Mm-hmm. And looking at our show notes, it's a hodgepodge of stuff, mostly about the Amazon Echo.
Interesting.
All right, but let's start with some non-Echo stuff. First, a pair of shout-outs for me. It's kind of thank yous to some people who I don't know personally, but I kind of feel slightly indebted to. Yeah, the first one is a shout-out to a Dutch illustrator who goes by the name of Stafe. I can't remember his full name, but I've got links to his YouTube channel. And he has a new ebook out called Procreate Primer, which is an ebook about the basics of painting in Procreate. It's $9.99 US in the Apple Store, and he has videos, so it's not just text and pictures. It also shows you how he does stuff. And the reason I'm giving him a shout out is, as you might recall, I endlessly talk about my daily doodle project, where I've been drawing a little drawing every day on my iPad Pro since January 1st of this year. And I use a tool called Procreate, which was just updated to Procreate 4. And when I was getting started, and even today, actually, I often would go look for little tutorials on how to do things because I just didn't know how to do it. I was too lazy to read the ebook manual that you can get for the software.
Mm-hmm.
And this Dutch illustrator, Stafe, kept coming up again and again. And his videos were always on target, always well explained, well done. His art is fun to look at. So when I saw the announcement for his Procreate Primer for the new Procreate 4 that was just released last week, or the week before, I said, hey, I feel fine paying $99 for a book that I may or may not read. I suspect I will. I have looked at it a bit, and it's really good. Anyway, $9.99. Shout out to Stafe. Thank you for his video tutorials, which has helped me greatly this past year as I tried to learn to use this little app. I shouldn't call it a little app. This really nice app called Procreate for drawing on the iPad. And I happen to use iPad Pro with an Apple Pencil, and it's just a lot of fun. The second shout out is to something I haven't used in a long time, but I used to use almost daily, and that's Paint.net. I don't know, John, did you ever use Paint.net on Windows?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've used it many times, and it's installed on my Surface Pro right now.
Yep. So it's still, with a free classic version, as the programmer calls it, is still available for free, but there is a Windows Store version that's available for $8.99 US. And even though I really don't use it anymore, I'm probably going to go pay my $8.99 just to say thank you for years and years of use in Windows when I was using it. And the reason I don't use it much anymore is I pretty much do everything on my iPad or my iPhone. But, you know, still, I got years and years of value out of his work, so kind of a small way to say thank you. And probably a tool I might use again one day. Anyway, so two shout-outs. One to Stafe for Procreate Primer, and one to the programmer for Paint.net, which is an awesome, awesome program that is still available for free. But if you want to get the Windows Store version, it's $8.99, and it might be the only Windows Store version, Windows Store software that's actually useful. So it has that distinction.
It's a little bit of a slam, but I guess I'll take it. I'm sure there are other useful pieces of software, at least.
In the Windows Store? I can't think of any.
Yeah, there's three or four somewhere tucked in there that we just don't know about.
Well, let's go down the list. Evernote Windows Store app version. No. Right? Let's see, what else is there? Wow, that list is pretty short. Isn't it? Oh, OneNote Windows Store version. No, that thing is awful. So, yeah. Anyway, I haven't tried it yet, so hopefully this isn't awful too. But like I said, it's more of a thank you than, gee, I really need the app. As an Apple Watch newbie, I discovered something listening to... Oh, gosh, what? I was listening to a podcast. I think it's iOS Weekly or something. One of Leo Laporte's programs and podcasts. And I learned that if you long press on that awful cluster of icons on your Apple Watch, which for me is impossible to find anything, you have the option to turn it into a list, a scrollable alphabetical list, which I think is way faster to find an app. So I did that. It was a great tip, and I'm passing it along. So passing it, you know,
And I've just done that with my Apple Watch, even though I've owned one for 3 years and have had the same frustrations. And I think vaguely I knew about that at some point and just never did it.
Yeah. So I learned that. Yeah. So the good tip that we learned from another podcast, iOS Weekly, like I said, the Twit Network. And I'm much happier with my Apple Watch now. And John, apparently you are much happier with your Apple Watch.
Yeah, I mean, I just figured out where most of the stuff was on my weird grid. Anything that makes the Apple Watch around. I know at one time there was supposed to be a way to snap that grid back together, but I never even figured that one out. There's probably some long press on something that I don't know about.
Yeah.
But I am quite happy with my Apple Watch right now because I got my Apple Watch Series 3 earlier than was expected. Originally, Apple said October 6th through 12th, and mine showed up on September 27th, so it was last Thursday.
Wow. Well, you know, under-promise, over-deliver, right?
That's their goal. So I got it set up, and my impressions, going from an original Apple Watch that I got on the first day it was available, version of the Apple Watch, to this, I am shocked at how much faster it is.
Oh.
To the point that there were things before that I thought, yeah, I know my watch can do this, but I don't really feel like waiting for my watch to do this. But on Friday afternoon, I got home, I left my phone on my desk and walked around, sent a few text messages on my watch, knew that I was getting all my notifications, all that. So I was very happy with it. And still am. So, and I do have the LTE version.
Okay.
Which, okay, so for anyone who's on Verizon and wondering how you're supposed to activate this thing, let me explain my pain and the weird things that happen.
Okay.
Because, of course, the last possible thing you want to do is contact Verizon support or any phone carrier support for any
human
reason.
Being.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's mostly phone carriers because it seems like, and given what I saw on the forums that I was reading, everyone got something different from Verizon,
wow.
depending on just who you got on the phone. Right. Some reps insisting, well, it has to have a SIM card installed because it reads no SIM because it's an electronic SIM.
Right.
But there were actually apparently some people who were told at the Verizon store, oh, you got to take it, or told over the phone, you have to take it to the Verizon store so they can open it up and put a SIM in it.
Open it up?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
So, I went to activate my cellular plan. I went to the cellular option in the watch settings on my phone, and it said that my plan didn't support the Apple Watch.
Oh, which is what I...
Weird.
You're right. That's what happened. Well, not... Would have happened to me, because I already knew that.
I thought it was very strange, because I'm on Verizon's, like, brand new unlimited plan that they launched a couple of months ago.
Okay, maybe that's the problem. It's too new.
Yeah. So I did some digging, and I found out that if you toggled off LTE and toggled it back on in the cellular settings on your phone,
right?
Basically, you go into settings, cellular, and then turn LTE completely off.
Okay.
Then I set it back to voice only. Then I set it to voice and data.
Right.
And then my data connection didn't work at all, so I had to toggle it off again and then do it again. Finally, I got my data connection on my phone working again. Then I went back to the cellular settings, and magically it said, okay, set up cellular. You have a plan that works and all that. So then I went through that, and the first step of the wizard was to specify my E911 address.
What?
Well, apparently on all phones, you know, they want to make sure they know where you are in case you call 911. So I had to walk through this little wizard. Now, here's the weird part.
Okay.
The LTE thing wasn't weird at all. I walked through a Thursday night two or three times. I go to my address and it tells me, oh, you have an apartment number in your address. That's not, you can't have that. So why don't you take one of these auto-suggested versions?
Okay.
So I tap on the auto-suggested version. Then it goes to activate, waits. Nothing happens, and then finally it says, oh, we can't activate it this time. You'll have to call and find out what's wrong.
Wow.
Which I want to do. So I did a bunch of resets and restarts and all that. Finally, I just went to sleep. Friday morning, I woke up and I thought, you know what? This is going to sound really dumb, but... So I went back through the process. And right. I got to the 911 screen, and I entered in my address without my apartment number so it wouldn't complain. And it went through, and it activated first time.
Okay, now, now this is the Apple wizard, right?
No, this is, it hands you off to a Verizon website.
Okay, so it's Verizon being stupid.
Yeah. So basically, enter your E911 address properly. Wow. And then hopefully it'll activate for you. But it was the, you know, and I think I even tried it once without the E911 properly. It was something along with their script where if you didn't put in the exact thing they were looking for, they didn't have a way to hook it up on the back end. Then, for those that are going to get more freaked out, on Saturday morning I got a message from Verizon saying, oh, congratulations on activating your new device. Here's your new phone number. Now, I did some digging. Verizon number share is set up on my account. You can see that through the website interface. But as far as I can tell, Verizon needs to assign a phone number, even if that phone number doesn't actually work.
Right. Because it's a different device.
It would have been nice if they had actually put that in the letter. But the letter was basically like, here's your new phone number. And I thought, nope, I'd rather have the phone number that's attached to my iPhone.
Right.
So... But I figured that out, so now I did test the LTE. Go ahead.
Did you try calling that alternate number?
I have not tried calling that alternate number. Okay. I don't know what happens, and I think I'll be cast into the depths of Verizon hell if I do. So
okay. Continue
probably
on.
Probably not going to tempt fate.
All right, continue but on.
I did verify that my phone can make and receive calls without the iPhone nearby, or my watch can make and receive on the regular number, so... But yeah, I've been now that I have it all set up, I'm very happy with my Series 3.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a way lot more excitement than I would have preferred to have gone through. So
it would have been really nice if I had just been able to walk through the wizard, say, on the first time and actually work. I know that's asking a lot, Verizon and Apple, but that would have been just enough excitement for me.
Yeah, and I should note, you know, I actually activated my watch at the Apple Store since I actually, you know, hoofed it over to the Apple Store and bought one in-store. I didn't pre-order or anything. And so I hope, at least, if that had happened to me, the Apple Store employee would have helped me out on it. I knew that my plan doesn't support the new watch LTE, so because I've got a grandfathered plan, and I'm not planning to change it anytime soon unless I have to. Which may happen. You know, I told you the story about T-Mobile cutting off my data plan when my grandfathered plan got, killed. And they didn't tell me that my grandfathered plan was going to go away. But at any rate, which is why I left T-Mobile. Because, you know, and they didn't even apologize when I called customer service to tell them about it. But at any rate. Okay, so you are now a happy camper.
Yep, just took a while.
Yep.
I will be very interested to see what happens if I order an iPhone X. And that device of my watch changes. Hopefully that will not screw up Verizon in any way. But, you know, it seems like I've always had issues with activating new devices on Verizon. So. Yeah.
Now, the iPhone X becomes available for purchase next week Monday? Or sooner?
No, it is actually a little bit later than that.
Or pre-order. Pre-order is next week.
Pre-order, no, I think it's even later than that.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was the 27th or so of October.
Oh, okay. So we got a long ways to go.
On the iPhone X. I will verify it right now just in case Apple decided to make my day and make it earlier. Okay. But kind of doubt that. But let's see, going to apple.com/iPhone-X, pre-order 10.27, available 11.3.
Okay, so I've got a long time more to think. I have not decided what to do about replacing my phone or not. But any case, last item about the watch, unless you have something else to add, is that I read on a Simco that he believes... Simco is the name of the site. I can't remember the name of the guy. But at any rate, believes that Apple is now the world's biggest watchmaker, overtaking Rolex with a total of $12 billion in sales since the first Apple Watch rolled out. So, and I assume this is sales in revenue, not in numbers, because I can't imagine they sell more than, well, maybe they do, I don't know. I was going to say, I can't imagine sell more than Timex and, you know, some of the consumer, lower cost consumer brands.
It's a good question. It would not surprise me, though. I am amazed, as I've said before on this podcast, at how many Apple Watches I'm seeing in the wild.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's one of those things where it took 2 or 3 years, and it took Apple getting some faster devices out there and getting people into the idea of it, but also the carriers and others offering deep discounts and bundling and deals and all that, but still, way better adoption of this than I've seen of Android Wear, Pebble, even any of the watches that we've ever, you know, talked about as smart watches.
Yeah, in fact, Verizon just pulled an Android Wear smartwatch that was only available for 4 months. They said, nope, we give up.
I mean, it's getting to the close where there is about ubiquitous as the Fitbit wrist trackers and those sorts of trackers. So yeah. That's definitely how Apple is selling them. So right.
Now, just to check with you, if we already discussed this, but I know before we started the podcast, you were saying you're amazed how fast your watch is compared to your Series 1.
The things that I never thought to try with the Series 1, I tried them, but they took too long, such as launching certain applications and things like that. I've been very happy with the speed on the 2, even around the 3. Even things like long pressing to get rid of notifications,
yeah,
I've noticed that's snappier. So it's a much more usable device than the Series 0 was.
Now, your LTE version has twice as much storage as mine does. I think I have 8 and you have 16 on the LTE version. Do you plan on using this? I mean, like, I don't have any music or anything stored on here except apps and presumably data associated with them.
I do plan to put at least one or two playlists on there so that I can go for walks on a walking trail and leave my phone in the car locked up and just take my car key and my watch and earbuds. So I do plan on using that, but I don't know what else I would even store on there.
Okay, just curious, because I know somebody was telling me, I think Ryan Ozawa or somebody was telling me, one of our previous guests in the show was saying, hey, you know, you get twice as much storage on the Apple Watch LTE. And, you know, when I mentioned to him that I was going to get a non-LTE version, and I said, not sure I'd use it. <You know>? And even if I could use the LTE watch with my plan, I'm still not sure I would have gotten it because, unlike a lot of people, I never go anywhere without my phone. If I'm walking around or whatever, I've got my phone with me because, you know, I like to have the camera. I often just spot something, I'll take a picture of that, and, you know.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be very many times when I'll be without my phone, but for me, it's things like leaving it in my bag, locked in my office, and then wandering around the floor and stuff like that. It's nice to just have what I need on my watch.
Yeah, that is kind of neat. Now, if it only had a camera, it'd be perfect. But at any rate, and speaking of having your phone around, this is a note to folks still using Windows Phone, and we have a bunch of friends who are doing that. Please note, friends, Windows Phone using friends. Bill Gates is now using an Android phone, so there you go. You know, that kind of tells you something.
You know, the true believers will stay true believers till the very end.
I wonder what Steve Ballmer uses.
You know, I don't know.
Because Windows Phone that's really his, you know, it was under his watch, right? I remember he famously mock-trashed an employee's iPhone in Safeco Field, one of those kind of places. Where they have a gathering, he saw one of his employees at this employee gathering taking photos using an iPhone, and he grabbed it, and he kind of mock-trashed it by, you know, stomping on the ground and stuff. Oh, well. Okay, so now, whole bunch of Amazon Echo-related stuff. First, a tip from my friend Paul Lawler, who has been a guest on our podcast a couple times. And we're going to be talking about this new Amazon Echo device called the Echo Connect that lets you make phone calls to POTS lines and cell phones and text messages. I think you can send text messages too, but in any case, that's kind of neat, and it attaches to it. So first of all, the The new Echo is $99, replaces the old one, which I think started at $189. I picked it up for $149, I think. So, way cheaper. Has apparently a cloth covering, which I think is a bad idea. Just picks up dust, in my opinion. And there's a new $149 Echo Plus, which has an it is an IoT hub and comes with one Philips Hue smart light bulb. Do you have one of those smart light bulbs? I do not.
I don't, but I've had it on my wish list for quite a while now. I'd like to have one and play around with it. I just don't have one yet.
What's the appeal? I mean, I guess I have some friends with a smart light bulb, and I haven't asked them, but what's the appeal of having a smart light bulb?
What I would probably see myself using it for would be being able to do different lighting scenes for different times of day.
Hmm.
Just warmer in the morning, and, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. Warmer in the evening and then cooler during the day.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. Because those light bulbs are expensive, so actually $149 for an Echo and a smart Hue light bulb is a pretty good deal, actually, if it's something you
want. One of the things that I really like about the Echo that I don't think anyone really talks about is the whole phone calling feature. Because what I see that replacing is the home phone that you knew would ring regardless of what people were doing. And, you know, if you think about it now, there are certain people I call that if they've switched off their phone into silent mode and I need to get a hold of them, I might be waiting 2 or 3 hours before they figure out that their phone's been off.
Yeah.
So I do like the idea of a device that sits there and rings and you know someone's calling you even if your phone's on silent. That's a cool feature.
Well, I'm probably going to spring to $35 for the Echo Connect for one thing and one thing only. I think it'd be a better experience when I have to make that dreaded customer service call to make a change or return something, or, you know, with a problem. And you know you're going to be on hold for at least 30 minutes, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so currently, you know, I have a cordless phone with a speakerphone option. That's okay. And, of course, I have smartphones, which you can go to speakerphone mode. But I just think it'd be nice to just say, you know, tell the Echo, hey, call this alleged customer service number and I'll
call
be on hold for 30 minutes.
Might
but
be service, might yeah. not be service.
And you tell me when somebody picks up the phone in there or, you know, something. So, yeah, looking forward to that. Looking forward to that. Then there's, in addition to those, Echo, Echo Plus, Echo Connect, then there's a $130 Echo Spot. Which is a smaller version of Echo and has a display. So it's kind of like the Echo Show. It has like a 2.5-inch circular display. And it's way before our time, but people might remember seeing photos of old black and white TVs from the 1940s and 50s that are round. So, you know, television sets didn't always used to be rectangular. They used to be round. Because, you know, cathode ray tubes are actually round. The squareness is an artifact of cutting off parts of the image.
Yep.
But at any rate, so that's kind of interesting. And finally, I'm not sure you're going to get that, by the way. And also, Amazon had to remove the YouTube app from the Echo Show. So, you know, I don't know if that's something I would watch on an Echo Show, but probably nice. And the last thing is probably something I won't get, and there are Echo Buttons, which are 2 for $20, so $10 each. But you have to buy them in pairs because they're really used as, well, like the name suggests, as a button for the Echo, sort of an accessory to the Echo. And you can use it for things like playing games, you know, like buzzing into Jeopardy games or something. So I can't really see myself using it for that kind of thing, but, you know, I can see where families, even couples might want to play games and Echo when they're just, you know.
Jeopardy on the Echo needs to get a little bit more refined. There have been many times where Carrie and I have played, and I have had the right answer, and it's told us that we're wrong.
Oh.
So, you know, that's we have kind of a love-hate relationship with Amazon Echo Jeopardy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. Are you going to get any of these? Any or all of them? Knowing you?
I don't think I'm going to get any of them, but I
not even the Echo Connect.
I like the Echo ecosystem. Well, I can make phone calls to my Echo right now through the app.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I needed for. But with Echo Connect, I don't really think I definitely need it. And I don't have it in a place where I would want to stand around and wait for customer service to actually pick up. So.
Oh, one other thing. The call, the ability of using Echo Connect to call to a POTS line or cell phone. Mm-hmm. If I remember reading the article correctly, it is free for U.S. of course, but also Canada and Mexico.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So if you have numbers that you call frequently, friends or family, in either of those two countries, to north or south of us, that's a good deal.
Yeah, if you have friends or family or enemies or whatever you have,
whoever.
You can contact.
Call Prime Minister Trudeau. Who knows? He might pick up.
I mean, crazier things have happened with Canadian prime ministers in the past.
That's so. Right. That's right.
That would be the least of his problems if all you want to do is just talk to him.
Right. And the final Amazon Echo-related thing I have is that apparently they demonstrated multi-step routines. They being Amazon. Amazon demonstrated multi-step routines with Amazon Echo. So I'm kind of looking for that, because when I wake up in the morning, one of the first things I do is I, tell it good morning, and it gives me some little trivia. I say what's up, and it, gives me like a calendar and my next calendar item and weather, and not really a full weather report, but kind of an indication and a little bit more trivia. And then I ask it for the full weather, and then I ask it for whether my daughter is and whether we're a couple places I lived and news. So it'd be nice to just to have a, one trigger phrase and just have all of those start ripping through.
It would be better if you just knew someone at the Weather Channel. And then you could just call up them every morning and ask.
Nah, that's not fun. That's not fun at all.
Well, if you are done with Echo News, I have Software of the Week.
Oh, go ahead, yeah.
This is something that I started playing around with. It's called Keybox.
Okay.
You can get it at sshkeybox.com. It is an open source, web-based secure shell access and key management application.
Okay.
I found out about it because I could install it on my new QNAP NAS that I've talked about in the past.
Okay.
But the nice thing about it is that it will, once you hook up all the SSH servers that you are in charge of or that you administer or that you have to control, it will take care of key management. It will roll out new keys, and you can revoke keys and things like that. They'll let you download a private key that it generates so that you've got a key for each person who would have access to that machine. But it also lets you do composite terminals. So on Tuesdays when I usually do my patching, I can log in through my VPN to my home server, get onto this piece of software, select all of the terminals that I want to update, and type in, sudo apt-get update one time and see it run on all of the machines. And so it saves you a little bit of time instead of having to go to a bunch of different consoles and open them at once.
Nice.
But that is requires the JDK, the Java Development Kit,
which
is
boom.
A little bit cumbersome. But it doesn't require Java in the browser. It just uses the JDK on the back end.
No, I understand. I just don't like anything having to do with Java. It just caused me
nothing. Yeah, I agree. But once you have it up and running, it's a very nice setup for being able to use different SSH terminals. You could also set it up so that you don't have to give out keys to people, that they can just log in and access whatever terminals they need.
Right,
so
right.
Kind of a nice piece of software.
Yeah.
And it is open source.
Yeah. I have one last question. It's not in our show notes, but it just came to me. What do you think of the new App Store on the iPhone? I think it's horrendous.
I think there's a lot of wasted white space.
I think there's a lot of wasted space, period.
Well, I will. So while I am looking at the App Store, I will also mention something to our listeners. Do not do this.
Okay.
I was showing one of my friends some of the parental controls on the iPhone. She had never seen them before. And what do you think I did? What do you see coming, Todd?
You set yourself in parental mode, and now you can't access things.
No, that is not what happened.
Okay.
But almost as bad, I clicked the little toggle to disable apps.
Okay.
Which, you then go to your home screen, and all the apps are missing, and that's kind of cool. You don't even see them. They're just like they aren't installed. But then I re-enabled apps and had app vomit all over my home screen.
What?
All of the little groupings for apps that I had, the folders that I had created, it blew those right away and just started putting out in a random order all of my apps back on a series of home screens.
What?
Yep, so all of the order that I had to reorder, and I'm still sort of reordering from there.
Why is that an outcome of, I don't get it.
Of turning on and off all your apps? No idea.
That is, okay, anyway, all right, no, not that anybody from Apple is listening to us, at least none that we know of, but Apple, the new App Store home screen, by home screen we mean the Today tab is terrible. It is a waste of space, period, white or otherwise. You have to scroll for each of the, I don't know, five featured apps. One icon, or five icons in a row would have been just fine, thank you. Daily, and then there's more giant pictures that I really don't need to see. App of the day, which, poncho, wake up weather, I don't know. Game of the day, flower.
Case. You should like wake up weather. It's waking up and getting the weather.
I guess so. But it's just, anyway, I think that this is going to lead to some kind of repetitive injury on people's thumbs because they now have to scroll so much in the new App Store to see anything, whereas before you could see pretty much everything on the initial page. I just don't like it at all. The other thing that the iOS 11 update problem I'm having with the iPhone waking up in landscape mode, even though I'm holding it portrait. So the way to do that is to scroll down so that you get to your notifications page or whatever that's called. And then it'll flip to portrait mode correctly. But it's annoying, and it happens to be about, I don't know, 80% of the time I wake up my phone. It's pretty annoying.
I will make a note. Another thing that I troubleshot this week and was quite annoyed by, I tried to do the iOS 11.01 update on my phone,
And
it just hung. You would hit install and download, or download and install,
right?
And it would look like it was going to do something. It would show the EULA, you agree to that, and then it would just do nothing. So you'd hit download and install again, and it would just do nothing. So I had to hook it up to my MacBook and do the update through iTunes. That was the only way to get it to it hung for about a day doing nothing. So I did give it time, Apple. It just didn't want to do any of your things.
Okay, so at any rate, I am now one of the cool people since I have a watch. John is even cooler because he replaced his older watch with his newer watch. I'm sure he's pretty happy with that. If you have any tips or tricks to offer me as an Apple Watch newbie, folks, please let me know. Because I was really happy to know how to turn that stupid cluster of icons into a list. I tell you, you know, as even though Android Wear obviously lost, it's still, the UI is really simple to learn and use. Apple Watch is actually a more complicated UI, in my opinion. For example, in Android, if you want to get to your list of apps, you just go to your list of apps, and maybe, John, I'm doing it wrong. So I press the little button on the side right under the crown, right? And that gets me to a list of the most recent apps, but I have to scroll all the way down if I want to get to all apps. Is there a faster way to do that? Or do I
press the press the crown?
Okay, so I go to the apps list, and I press the crown?
No, just from the home screen, from your watch face,
Tap
the crown.
Okay. Okay, got it. Which now takes me to my list, thankfully. All right. Well, see, I learned something. Thank you, John. Because it said press the button for the apps, so I said, okay, I'm pressing the button. Where do I get all my apps? But any case, now I'm happy. I'm also happy with the battery. So my Moto 360, which is now a hair over 2 years old, at the end of the day at about 10 p.m., it's usually down to about 35% battery. Even now that I'm not using it, it just kind of sits around all day. It's about maybe 60% battery, not being used at all day. Whereas the Apple Watch, after full days of use, it's usually about 75% charge. So, pretty happy with what I've been seeing thus far. Okay, John, you got anything else you want to add? I'm out.
I think I'm good. I think we've covered about everything.
All righty. Okay, folks, so this has been Mobile News Podcast number 224. Next week, I assume we're going to be talking about whatever Google announces this week.
Yep.
Hopefully something I can afford, like a $50 Google Home device, which would be nice to have. And maybe the new phones, although I think I'm going to get the Moto G4 now. I think the Pixels are just going to be too expensive. So that is all, folks. Talk to you next time.